Greetings. This is Bruce Scheer, your host of the Sales Conversation Podcast. You might be a full-time sales professional, a consultant, a lawyer, a business leader, or even a school teacher like my sister. The big point is, we are all in the business of influencing others. And if you want to uplevel your selling conversations to impact the way people think and act, this show is for you. In this episode, we are speaking with Tom Williams. He's the co-founder and CEO of DealPoint. Tom was somewhat fanatical about taking a buyer-centric approach to sales and has built his company around facilitating the buying process, helping the 5.4 buying decision makers in a complex deal and the sellers on the sales side in staying connected and moving forward in the buying journey together. We will be talking about and creating some distinctions around taking a buyer versus a seller-centric approach to influence the buying process. So Tom, how did you become fanatical and really into understanding the sales process? And the topic that we're talking about today is how to be buyer versus seller centric in your sales process. So, you know, why are you excited about this whole topic?
Well, thanks, Bruce. The reason I care about this is that so much energy is wasted, not just on the seller's side of sales process, but also on the buyer's side. When you look at the US economy or even the global economy, the amount of time that's wasted on bad deals is just criminal. So as selling organizations, if we can improve how we sell and how we interact with our counterparts in the buying side of the equation, the entire world economy could become more efficient just by doing sales better. And that's why I care about it.
Yeah, likewise. And hence the reason for this overall podcast. The goal is just for the Sales Conversation Podcast is to up-level selling conversations. And it's my desire and wish for better buyer and seller conversations leading to better commerce, better deals, and a better place, if you would.
Ultimately, a good salesperson is an advisor to their customer. And the more we can bring them closer to that relationship, the better off everybody is, because salespeople tend to be very knowledgeable. They know how to make the buyer's life easier or better. If we can help them express that relationship a little bit better, then everybody is better off.
That's perfect. Well, let's talk about it, Tom, in terms of, you know, our topic, you know, how to be buyer versus seller centric. What do we mean by buyer versus seller? And could you push into the whole notion of seller centric? What do you see in the world and what's getting in the way?
The typical sales process, if you ask anybody, they start with prospecting, then they qualify the guy, then they, as soon as they can, they get to the demo. There's going to be some negotiation and then go for the close. The problem there is that it's all focused on the seller's needs. And you'll notice that in all of those steps, there wasn't talk about education or helping the actual buyer's problem. The other place where I think this really comes in is that you can very quickly get distracted from how can I actually help this buyer with what do I need to sell? And when those two issues become misaligned, then you're going to end up having bad deals that can take months to figure out that actually there's no good deal here.
Absolutely. So we talked about the seller showing up and throwing up. I think we've heard that term before, or, hey, finally I got the meeting. I get to come in. I get to talk about myself. Now I'm just racing to the demo so I can show them how cool this stuff is. And then I want to move forward towards negotiating, you were saying, as a typical process.
Yeah. And there's an awful lot of energy spent on just getting to that first meeting, and they'll put all their energy into getting that meeting. They'll give their perfectly canned presentation, which doesn't ask a single question, but it's this, you know, PowerPoint slide one, PowerPoint slide two, three, four, 10. And the buyer hasn't had a chance to really express what's in it for them. So I think the sooner you can put yourselves in the shoes of that buyer, the better off everybody's going to be. But it's very, very easy to make your Salesforce opportunity stages match prospect, qualify, demo, paper, close. No one's going to complain about that except for the buyer. That's not meeting their needs.
It's just a quick little story. A lot of times the buyer doesn't even complain. One of my clients, it was pretty funny. A woman gave me a call and said, "Hey, Bruce, do you have any ideas for how to help me get reconnected with the CEO of an airline?" And I'm like going,
whoa, you know, I don't think I've got any silver bullets. What's going on though? Tell me. She said, well, I flew in all the big guns, my vice presidents, et cetera. We met in the CEO's office and he was smiling and seemed to really like what we were talking about. And now, you know, I keep pinging him and he won't respond. What can I do? What can I do to kind of get this back on the rails? You know, it's a lost deal.
Yeah, that actually really reminds me of, I was looking at the top 10 reasons that salespeople lose deals. It was the Harvard Business Review put this together. And the number one is no decision or gone dark. And you hear crickets, gone dark. I was talking with a gentleman and he said, there was a decision. And the decision was, they don't want to talk to you. It's that's what happened. And so you really can't blame the customer. They're busy. You didn't give them enough value or didn't offer them something that made it worth their time to engage with you. So really it's on you. You didn't do a great job of finding out what their needs were or finding out, am I actually talking to the right person? And so, yeah, that's why they didn't call. You weren't helping him out.
Have you ever heard of the expression, like a dog watching television?
I like it.
Yeah. Have you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Or what that means for the audience, if people haven't heard it, is like that CEO, he was smiling. And of course he's CEO because he smiles a lot. You know, he's a great politician and business leader. And that's how he rose to the top. But you can't mistake that for genuine interest and desire for solving a problem. That's just being courteous and cordial and you're bearing with that slide 1, 2, 3, 6, 10 type of presentation that you highlighted.
Yeah, I heard a phrase, that's when the BlackBerry comes out. It's when you're on slide 5. I mean, and there's, whether it's a killer presentation or just a terrible presentation, doesn't matter. You really want them to be talking about what their problems are. But I think it's also important that it's not just an interrogation. Because you also need to be leading with that value of some insights that you have into their industry. Otherwise, you know, they're just being quizzed. You just take half an hour of their time. And that certainly happened with me where I've been prospected and they're just nailing me on all my stats of what my company needs are. And I'm like, what do I get out of this? So you do have to be careful that part of that buyer-centric process is, am I delivering value at every stage to the buyer? Because otherwise, again, you're going back to that sales center where I need to have X, Y, and Z in order for me to fill in my opportunity scorecard. That is not helping the buyer. So always go back to how you're going to be able to help that buyer and make their day slightly easier, add some value to what they're doing.
I was talking to Chris Orla with Gong.io. He's on the show as well on another episode. But we were talking about, especially if you're talking to C-level people, if you ask them more than about 4 questions, you might be shown the door.
Yeah.
You know, they're not there to be interrogated. You know, are you there to add value or not?
Yeah. And that's, I like to recommend 1 or 2 insights. So what do you know about the industry that nobody else knows? And if you can lead with a very short insight and then say, how are you taking advantage of this? Or how are you going to walk away from this disruptive wave that's coming? Now you have their interest because you've shown that you are interested in their industry. You understand that their pains are, and you start to get a little bit further by doing that that collaboration with identifying what they need to know.
So Tom, we had also talked about being too low in the account. I think yes. When we were pre-episode here, as just one of the seller-centric pitfalls, if you would. Could we talk about that for a bit?
Yeah, when I look at a good buyer-centric process, there are 3 components to that. You really want to have a very strong understanding of what the buyer need is, and we just talked about that. You need to have a good understanding of who the buyer is, because there's your champion, but there are going to be, was it 6.25979 other decision makers in a typical enterprise deal. So you have to be aware not only of what those people's names are, but also what their interests are and what their priorities are, and be able to present your solution to their problem in their flavor. And that, again, that's you're putting yourself as if you were an advisor to the organization, as if you'd been brought in and being paid by their organization to help them fix this problem. The CFO is going to have a different set of concerns than the IT manager. So make sure that you understand what those concerns are. I actually heard a fantastic recommendation, a tactic to do this is if you bring up to your champion some of those questions that a CFO might ask, you can make it a lot more likely that you actually get into that meeting with the CFO. Say CFOs typically ask the question about amortization, then say, do you think there are any other killer questions that your CFO might have? Why don't we go and talk to him? Because by knowing something that your champion doesn't know and suggesting that the CFO is going to ask those questions, you're able to kind of hitch yourself up and get into those higher level conversations. And you're doing that by putting yourself in that buyer's perspective.
So just to recap, you know, it's just imperative to understand, did you say the 6.9 something?
Yeah.
I always use the 5.4. I think I got that from Gartner CDE.
Yeah, yeah. They just add another number every 6 months.
And it probably is getting more complex over time. You know, that's what I've heard. And there's data points out there, of course. But the key thing is just understanding all these different parties that are part of the decision-making body, and then really understanding, you know, helping to characterize the problem for their world, their particular area of the business, and what that's costing them.
Well, yes, yeah. And that's where you can bring in that's those insights that you have, because you're dealing with their fellow companies. So either their competitors or their colleagues in the industry. So you can say, I have seen this problem in 5 other organizations. And so you're not alone is a great leader reassurance. We've seen this problem before. It happens with other organizations. Here's what they did. And now you are becoming maybe even a spiritual advisor to that CEO and helping them lead their business to greatness. And really, once you have that trust, it becomes a lot easier to implement those changes, which not coincidentally are probably going to include your product.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah.
It's not all altruism.
The value you're bringing. So you talked about buyer need as a key factor for a buyer-centric selling process. And we talked about, you know, that role-based value that you need to be, you know, uncovering in terms of that problem definition, the impacts of the problem, and then how you might be able to change that situation for them. What else should we talk about in terms of attributes of being buyer-centric in the sales process?
I think the thing that people most paper over is, you know, there's all this work towards getting the champion or even the whole buying team to say, yes, we want to buy that. And then you think, great, mission accomplished, I'm out of here. But in fact, that's when the real selling begins, is from the, yes, I believe your value prop, to I have now cut the check. And there is a massive actual buying process involved there. The hard part is that they may not know what that buying process is inside their own organization. So again, you have the luxury of having gone through this before, where maybe they haven't, and you can guide them through what a likely buying process is going to be. I really like the idea of a mutual action plan, where you say, okay, here's what I'm understanding. If we need to go live January 1, same time that your new production line turns on, then you're probably going to need a financial review, and you're going to need a legal review and a technical review. Does that sound right? And you get there.
And that's perfect. And so what you're doing there is you're creating a compelling event, you're making this deadline driven.
Well, you find out what the compelling event is at that production line, but then you work backwards from that to say, well, there's going to be these milestones to make that happen. Does that sound right? And then they say yes. And they say, well, who would be in charge of getting that financial check or getting the IT review? And they'll go and do some digging and find out who that is. And now you're building up that stakeholder team, which is crucial about knowing who the buyer is. Then two things happen. First of all, you're a lot more likely to have the deal actually go forward because there's a clear plan of action. And the buyer feels good that they're in safe hands because you've done this before and you're helping them guide this this goal through their organization. Second, you have a much higher accuracy of forecast because now you have these milestones that are set out ideally with due dates. And if they slip, then first of all, you know that you're not going to hit your close. So you can tell your manager, I'm not going to hit as forecast because we're missing these milestones, which can be months in advance, but you have much better notice. Mm-hmm. And then the really cool thing is that you can now use these milestones as a reason to call and lean on the customer. Because you can say, we made a commitment that in order to go live in January, which you said we needed to do, we need to have the IT review done here in October. But it's October 10th and it hasn't happened yet. So let's work with Barry to make that happen. How do we make that happen?
And just to highlight, Tom, that's not just being, you know, pushy or manipulative or whatever, but for the audience, just know that, you know, Tom, you've talked about establishing that value and the cost of delay and making that compelling event. So you're on their side. You're
that's the thing.
You're being a helpful pest, moving things along.
You're saying, customer, you said that this is when it had to happen. Yeah. You said it was going to take 6 weeks for the review. So if we don't get the review done by next week, then we're going to miss those deadlines that you defined. And here it is, you can see it plain as day. And the really nice thing about that is that you're not calling just to say, I'm just calling to follow up on my proposal. You're calling to say, we need to make this happen. Otherwise, you're going to start losing money. How can I help you avoid losing money? And ideally, if you set it up right, then you actually have a dollar value on that. I've even seen it where you can get a dollar value at a daily or a monthly rate and start calculating, you know, we're already slipped by 6 weeks. That's going to be $75,000 that we've lost. Now, I will say that can be a hard pill to swallow. You need to have a pretty awesome value model in order for that to really hit home. But when you put the numbers in front of the executive sponsor, they're going to ask, what's this $75,000 bucks? And you say, well, that's because Barry's late on the IT review. Well, I guess you know that Barry's going to get a phone call pretty soon. So you're moving it forward. You're not just saying, I'm just following up. You have a plan and you're working against the plan. And it's understanding that plan is that it's the buying process. That's the key. And then I also think it's important to have an executive summary that their boss's boss can digest very quickly. It's very tempting to share a 30-page PowerPoint with, you know, every single part of your value prop in beautiful full color graphics. But the senior decision makers don't have time for that. They want a succinct summary, and then sure, you know, share that detailed doc as well if they want to get into it, but have something that they can consume in just a couple of minutes of thumbs up and let the peons get back on with their day job.
And one mutual acquaintance to both of us, Chris Ortolano, he told me that he likes to even include himself in video, especially when it's upstairs under review, and it might even be part of a proposal, but have some video snippets that are relevant for each one of those parties in that review process.
It brings a lot of personality in. It certainly makes a difference to having even just your photo somewhere in the communications. Yeah, Chris is 100% on the money there. Video is a really succinct way to get into the head of those executive decision makers very quickly, and it has fantastic credibility. A, that you took the time to make something personalized. B, that you know what you're talking about. And C, that you're just a fellow human being. They're a lot more likely to remember you with that kind of video snippet than if you just send them an email or share a PowerPoint file.
Yeah, a bunch of slides, you bet. So what else should we talk about in terms of being buyer-centric in the selling process?
Well, there's some really nice rewards of being buyer-centric. Not least, you get a much faster sales process, because rather than hitting these dead ends because you didn't get into who are the decision makers, what is the buying process, you know that in advance. So the sale is more likely to proceed with fewer hiccups. At the same time, you get to a faster no quicker, because when you understand what those needs are, you can see, hey, this isn't a good deal, or we don't have the right executive sponsor here, because I know that we need a financial guy and the financial guy is saying no. So you can get to a no faster and head out to greener fields. And I think there's with buyer-centric, there's less hope-based forecasting. It's you're able to say, it's going to close by the end of the month because I've spoken with Barry and Sally and June, and they have agreed that the value prop is right, and they have validated that they need X, Y, and Z in order for it to pass through their purview. That's a forecast you can rely on. And it's a lot different than, well, I hope that they say yes to my proposal that I emailed out without really getting into it.
Sure. Yeah. No, makes sense. Well, what should we recommend for individual sellers to be more buyer-centric? Are there any resources or advisement that you would have for individual sellers just upping their game and being buyer-centric?
You know, I've heard a great thing yesterday. It's that every SaaS company is just a spreadsheet that's been automated. So I strongly recommend getting this stuff in place as process before you start buying tools left, right, and center. Having a mutual action plan, it can be as simple as a Google Doc that you share back and forwards with that customer so that you have these agreed milestones. So have a mutual action plan. Make sure that you have a rock solid business case that has good formatting and works well and is personalized and takes their information and puts it into a business case. Once you're comfortable with that and you have that good sales process and it's being executed by at least some of your team, then I think absolutely go ahead and find some technologies that will let you be more consistent in that. DealPoint is certainly one, and I'm happy to talk all day long about DealPoint. You mentioned Gong earlier. I really like Gong. It's the one that records sales calls and then lets the manager review them so that you can see, is my messaging being done consistently? Am I hitting those points that need to be hit, asking the right questions? And then I also think it's always important to make sure that you are giving a great buying experience. So look at the sales process from your buyer's eyes. What are they receiving? Is it just a whole bunch of emails? Is it a bunch of Google Docs that you're sharing? And make sure that you make it really easy for them, not only to understand your value proposal, but also for them to share it internally. So just be cognizant of the fact that the prospect is not as good at this as you are, and give them the tools so that they can be successful inside their organization.
Yeah, and Tom, to talk about DealPoint just for a bit, can you help the audience understand what that is? And it's probably not a solution for individual sellers, but maybe they could introduce that to their companies.
Yeah. So the idea of DealPoint is that it's a secure deal room where every deal has a unique location on the web, where you can share files, you can agree a mutual action plan with your customer. But its real value is that the buyer can see, here's where we are right now, here's where we need to go. And then when they're presenting the case internally, rather than saying, hey boss, I think we should spend $100,000 on the widget factory. Instead, they can say, look at this idea. What do you think, boss? And it makes it a lot easier for them to present internally. So by putting everybody on the same page, it's a lot more likely that the deal is going to go forward smoothly.
Cool. Yeah. So it's that online collaborative environment between the buyer and seller, and especially amongst that buying committee, if you would, or decision-making body internally, so they can all be on the same page.
The really nice thing is when you've built this room up with the assets and the key milestones and all that, it's a lot easier for that buyer just to invite their executive sponsors into that deal room. And now you can see that buyer walking through the room, seeing what assets they're consuming and getting super high resolution validation on, do we have the right people involved in this deal? Are they looking at the right things? And are they validating on the assumptions that we've made with our champion?
Excellent. So Tom, how can the audience get in touch with you?
DealPoint.io, come on down. I've got to say one funny thing to the purveyor of DealPoint.com who wanted $75,000 for DealPoint.com. It's DealPoint.io. And it costs $16.
Well, that sounds more cool anyway.
It's the hip location.
It's hip. All right. Well, very good. Tom, thanks a lot for the time and joining the episode.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
That was a great episode. Tom certainly knows his stuff and is dedicating his life energy to improving the interconnect between buyers and sellers in high consideration deals. Here's a few key takeaways I gained from this conversation with Tom. First, I love Tom's why, making the buying process more efficient and effective to facilitate beneficial change. That's a wonderful ambition. Secondly, I also appreciate how he does this by making the overall buying process more buyer-friendly. Helping your champion carry a role or persona-based value proposition to each key party in the buying process. Third, I really liked how he framed, once they say yes, that's where the real selling begins. So many deals end in no deal, and here's where you really need to help the buyer help themselves in removing friction to getting to yes and a signed contract. In complex sales,
often once the business side is satisfied and they say yes, you have to get through further technical, legal, and financial hurdles. So Tom's advice for how to be useful to your champion in these matters is extremely useful. I've dropped links for how to engage further with Tom in the show notes, available through your podcast player or at thesalesconversationpodcast.com. Thank you for listening to this episode. As this is a new podcast, if you find the content valuable, I would appreciate it if you could go to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and review this show. It will greatly impact how people can find and take advantage of this and other episodes. Also, please connect with me on LinkedIn. Until next time, I wish you huge success in up-leveling your selling conversations.